Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the People of Packaging podcast. I am your host, Adam Peek, for this one, and I want to tell you about my guy, Justin Welsh. I get asked this question a lot, like, Adam, how did you get going with content creation, strategy, tools, you know, starting a podcast, all that kind of stuff? And a lot of that had to do with sitting and learning and taking courses from Justin. And so if you are wanting to get started on your journey, you have an opportunity to do that. I will have a link in the show notes, but it is his course Idea, Audience, Proof, and Product. It is $150 to take it. It's a one-time cost, not annually, not monthly, not quarterly, none of that. $150 to take the course. You get all the content. It is super actionable. I promise you, if you are looking to just build some side income, build some other revenue, or just get started on your personal brand, Justin is that guy. So click the link here in the show notes to get going and go sign up for the course. All right, so we have got an awesome episode with Andy Kurtz. Andy is with Buttermilk Creative. He and I connected through Kirk Visola. Him and Kirk host a room, I guess it's a room, on Clubhouse together, and it's phenomenal. Andy is a tremendous packaging designer, and his story is great. So I can't wait for you to connect up and learn more about Andy Kurtz from Buttermilk Creative. Let's go.
All right, Andy, we're live on the podcast, but not really live because if it's terrible, who cares? You know, we'll edit stuff out like we were just talking about, or it just won't even make the air. But I have 100% confidence this conversation is going to be live on the People of Packaging podcast. So I am joined by the Andy Kurtz. Andy, why don't you are with Buttermilk Creative. That is your company though, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I'm excited to talk about where that name came from. I hope there's a cool story. We don't really prep much, as you can probably tell. I asked Andy before, I said, is there somebody you want to talk about, or should we just choose your own adventure? And he went, choose your own adventure. So we're gonna do it. It's gonna be awesome.
Yes.
Andy and I, we met up on Clubhouse. Andy is hosts a Clubhouse show with our mutual good friend Kirk Visola. And so I've been listening to that. He's been participating in our sustainable packaging one, and just another friend that I feel like I've made that I've never met during COVID. Like, we would hang out and feel like we've been friends for a while, but we've just never actually like seen each other's faces outside of a video camera. So anyway, Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be on your podcast. And like I said, you're a pro, so I'm honored to be here.
Man, I've made it, Mom. My mom's probably going to listen to this, and I have just been called a professional,
perfect,
a professional podcast host.
I'll take that payment in Bitcoin. And
yeah,
perfect. Whenever you
I've actually already sent it. My Bitcoin paid for some time travel. I've already had the conversation. I already knew it, and it's already in your account.
So, you and Elon, you know, good job.
to the moon, me and Elon. Oh man, he would be a fun guest to have on the podcast.
He would be. He could talk about packaging.
I think he could, or at least a packaging engineer from Tesla. I'm connected to a few of them
on the
socials. Anyway, we're not going to talk about Bitcoin or Elon Musk. Tesla.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we could, but let's not. I want to talk about you, and I want to talk about the work that you do at Buttermilk Creative and what your journey and your path was to get to a place where you were like, you know what, screw it, I'm starting my own thing. I'm sure that was a bit of a leap. So first of all, just kind of a quick introduction, you know, where do you live? What's your favorite animal that starts with the letter P? I don't know, family status, all that kind of good stuff. Just normal things, right?
That you're
an everyday conversation.
Absolutely. So, yes, I'm Andy Kurtz, creative director and founder of Buttermilk Creative. We're based in North Carolina, Greensboro, North Carolina, which is a minor city here in the state. Family status, I have a wife and two amazing children. Arlo is 8. Romy is 15 months old. And we live in this amazing little neighborhood over here in Greensboro called Lindley Park, with a lot of good community, and it's just a fun place to be, because when you're young, you want to sort of rebel and like live in really cool places. But as you grow old and get a family, you realize that cool places aren't super accessible for families, at least how we sort of set it up. So we set up shop in this neat little neighborhood within walking distance to our son's elementary school and other friends, you know, so like, it's like this little like bubble of 1950s in a good way, where he can walk to friends' houses. We can walk to school every day, and we can hop on, we can go to the international airport, which is, you know, 15 minutes away, and one nonstop flight to New York or wherever, you know, or we can go to Raleigh and Charlotte, and, you know, we can get culture outside of our little small town.
Sure.
How
long would it take for you to go see a UNC Duke basketball game? That's really all I care about, because I could be recruited from Salt Lake City to Greensboro. Yeah.
Absolutely. So if the tournament is in town, it's maybe a 5-minute walk from our house.
Oh, to UNC Greensboro, because they do the tournament there pretty often, right?
Yeah, at the Coliseum. So yeah, we could literally, I mean, it depends if we want to go to the bar first, but like if we just want to go straight to the Coliseum, it's 5 minutes, you know, TBD if we're going to hit the bar before there.
Yeah. Well, obviously.
We've got a great bar and laundromat called Suds and Duds here that is a good hangout. they used to be able to smoke there. And so people would wash their clothes, and then the smokers would be smoking in the bar. And so your clothes would smell like smoke. Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. But we could get there fairly quickly. And then if we're going to Durham, you know, that's an hour long drive down easy. I-40. Yeah, it's easy. Come on.
All right. Yeah. Well, that, we need to make that happen. In Fort Collins, and more specifically in Loveland, Colorado, there used to be a store kind of like Suds and Duds, but it was called the Bibles and Wigs store. So it was your one-stop shop for all different versions of the Bible and also wigs.
I love it.
It seems like a couple that was like, we need to start a business together. Yeah. And then one's like, I am really passionate about wigs. And it's like, I think people need the word of God. And they're like, well, why not all under one roof? They didn't last very long, but it was funny to drive by. You're like,
oh, Bibles and wigs.
The Bibles and wigs store. That's awesome. Cool. So we should probably start talking about packaging at some point in time, though I do really love North Carolina. I've told you before, I was close to going to college out there only to watch college basketball. That's all I wanted to do, was just pick any school in North Carolina and go there and just be able to drive to great college basketball. It's not just Duke and North Carolina, you know, NC State's really good. Wake Forest is really good. Even, you know, the state schools, right? UNC Greensboro's had a good team in the past. Oh, yeah. Trying to think of who else. I want to say UNC Asheville's been pretty decent recently. It's awesome. So we could talk about that for a while, but I want to talk about Buttermilk Creative. And how did that start? What was your work journey to get to that point?
Yeah. So I went to school down in Florida at Ringling College of Art and Design. And my wife, girlfriend at the time, she was also down in Florida. And we stayed in Florida for about a year and a half post-graduation. And I worked at a print shop there, and she worked at a residential architect. She does interior design. And then around 2007, everything was starting to crash, especially Florida and California. And so, you know, we sort of felt those effects earlier than the rest of the country. And so, you know, just everything sort of hit the fan, and we were like, okay, what are we going to do? So really the original plan was to move back here, but live in the town that's like next to us, which is called Winston-Salem, which is a really cool town. But during that sort of transition, I had applied to a job at the Fresh Market, which was an in-house, that's a specialty grocery store. And the position was just in-house graphic designer. And there's a position of design at a grocery store. Like, what is this? But I didn't care because it was relatively in the area, you know, and you just sort of roll the dice with that kind of thing. And I ended up getting a job there in November of 07, and just started just building my career there, you know, like early, you know, just from the, just getting to know the business and learning the inner workings of that world. Like I really loved it. And like soon after getting hired, I started to lobby for the private brand design business, private brand packaging design business, because we were working with an outside agency. And I was like, you have two super talented designers here in-house, like who know the brand, like let's do this in-house.
Right.
And so while I didn't manage to like take over everything by the time I left, we did the bulk of the private brand packaging design during my tenure there, which was 7 years. And that's
is it at all lost on you that you now run an agency and you got your experience by telling somebody that they didn't need an agency?
Exactly. No. that's what's so funny about when you're in-house, you have so much work that you turn it away and you like come up with reasons why you can't take on a project. Like you rationalize, like you do these, like we had a project management system. I think it's called @task, where I would literally run reports weekly where I could point out to each director why I couldn't take on their project this week. And then I left and I went to like begging people for work, you know, like I went from begging people not, exactly. It's hilarious, but it's different. I think it's different when you're like this large grocery store versus like a small brand, like a startup brand. Like, I think that's beneficial. Like you can't, like a lot of these founders like do their own packaging design. They do their own branding. They've set up their website on Shopify. It's like, well, who's running the company? Like, are you like, oh, it's me. Well, it's like, how are you doing all this stuff? Like you've got to be able to portion out the budget so that you can hire some professionals to come in at some point in the, you know, like I get it, like getting off the ground, you can't do that. But at some point you have to recognize that you have to bring some professionals in. Yep. So, but you know, with like, you know, these humongous corporations, create an in-house team. If you need to supplement, like we've worked with Wegmans and Publix because we have that grocery experience, which is so unique to, you know, say you work in-house at a insurance company. I mean, I'm sure that has its own little quirkiness. Working in-house at a grocery store and retail has its own quirkiness. And so, you know, we've worked with we've worked with other grocery stores because we can sort of get plugged into these projects midstream, you know, like we don't have to get onboarded. You know, it's like, oh yeah, the category manager's freaking out about this particular call out. Yeah, I get it. You know, we can adjust that or whatever.
Yeah. There's a compression to the system where it's not like, okay, we got to bring them in. And then we have to explain all the intricacies of grocery private label. Yep. It's like, no, just call up Andy. He knows what to do. He can just come in, knock it out, him and his team. Is it two of you then that run the agency?
So yeah. So it's me who runs a lot of the design portion of it. And then my wife, Nicole, who does a lot of like the back end, like inner workings, you know, administrative stuff for lack of a better term. So okay. Also like will peek over my shoulder when I'm like, you know, spending way too much time noodling on a design. She'll be like, did the client really say that they wanted that, you know, very specific illustration of this or that, you know, like of that, you know, fruit or whatever on that label? And I'm like, well, no, but it's going to look really good, aesthetically pleasing here. And it's like, no, stop, get out of there and do what they said.
Yeah. She provides like the level of normalcy, like the normal human who's like, yeah, it looks great. It looks great, Andy. Did they ask for it? No. Do you think they'll care if it's not there? No, but okay. Yeah.
And more importantly, she sends the invoices out and she's like, did you send an estimate on that? Are we charging them for that? And I'm like, well, no, but, and she's like, nope, stop.
Stop. Stop. Yeah. See, hon, what happened is I was out and I was having a beer with some buddies and I was thinking like, this could just use a little bit happier yellow.
Could use 6 hours of my time, you know, knocking this out. So yeah, that.
yeah, exactly. That's great. And how long ago did you make the leap then from Fresh Market into Buttermilk Creative?
So LinkedIn tells me it was 6 years and 7 months ago. So around 2015, like January 2015, it was pretty clean break there. So it's easy to do the math. It was time, you know, like just, I started to get the itch around probably 5 years, and then just, you know, with starting a family and just sort of like looking more into the future. You know, if you can't imagine yourself in your current position or at your current company in 5 years or 10 years, then it's probably time to start looking for something new, you know? And so I'd always rebelled against sort of the traditional corporate sort of structure and other sort of guidelines that we had to live under. So like, for instance, you know, you couldn't, like, right before I left, they finally let you wear a beard. And so what I did before that, which if you look at like older, like if you Google me, you'll see that like I spoke at the Dialine conference a couple of times and I had a handlebar mustache because I couldn't have a beard. So I was like, well, I'm just going to grow the biggest mustache you've ever seen. As I could grow. And so I just always bristled at all that kind of stuff. So I knew that I was like, I don't know if I'm fit for going to another place. Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. It just made sense to try, you know, take a stab at our own sort of thing. And I felt like I'd built enough of a network and, you know, had enough, whatever chutzpah to go out there and do this on our own.
That's great. So,
yeah.
And I want to dig in a little bit more on not only the work that you're doing, but also, you know, some words of advice that you might have for people in the industry. But I do have to ask, you would be the first graduate of this school, the Ringling School. What is the Ringling School? And there's got to be a really good circus joke kind of in the question there. It's not the same, right? It's not the same, like Ringling Brothers. Is that who started it? Is it a different wording?
It's actually the wife of John Ringling. I think it was, I'm not even going to try to, I can't even remember her name, but so Ringling Brothers had their winter quarters in Sarasota. So they would travel the world or travel the nation or whatever, and then they would store, you know, during the winter they'd store everything and like camp out, you know, in Sarasota in the warmth in the winter. And so she had all these connections to the art world because she's a socialite, you know, and she's a lover of the arts. And so she would bring all, so she was like, well, I'm bored down here, you know, like John's off there feeding the elephants. So I want to do my thing. And so she would bring all these creative people down to Sarasota who wouldn't normally winter in in Florida at that time. So she brought, you know, famous illustrators down there, and just, you know, all these creative minds would come down. And then she was like, well, I have all these creative minds here for, you know, the winter. What if we did workshops and just invited the community over? And so that, you know, the school was born out of this sort of idea, and it just has become this thing, you know. So like James Rosenquist, the pop art painter, had his studio down in that area of Western Florida. And Sol Lewitt, who is another painter, pop art 60s painter, also worked in the area. There was a Sarasota School of Architecture that was like mid-century modern inspired.
Interesting.
And so it grew, you know, there's just this community that grew out of that area. And so the school grew out of that. Okay. When I went to the school, it was called, and that's the neat thing about it. It was focused on what we would call commercial art, not fine art, not gallery art. Because let's be honest, to be a gallery painter, you have to, that's like a celebrity. That's like one in a million, you know? And so like, you have a much better chance of being a commercial artist than a gallery artist.
Way more. Yeah, there's, I grew up in a very conservative Christian area. So there was only one painter, and that was Thomas Kincaid, the painter of light, if you're familiar with his.
Oh yeah.
I think he was the only one my parents ever had. I did not grow up around, like you're saying all these names, and I'm like, I totally get you on that. But I mean, I can imagine. So it's not like there's way more commercial artists, you know, just to create, you know, like packaging art or graphic design or, you know, that kind of work than there are somebody who has their own gallery.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you get signed on to the, you know, any gallery in Soho or Chelsea or whatever, you know, like that's just, it's,
it you may as well happen. Be trying to make the NBA or the NFL. It's the same kind of.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Okay. Yeah. So they really focused on, you know, creating and helping nurture the student that was going that path. Okay. And when I went, it was called the Ringling School of Art and Design. They've since rebranded to Ringling College of Art and Design. But they're known, like if you look at, if you dig into any of like the Pixar and the staff that does those movies, like there's likely a ton of Ringling graduates in there. They've got a crazy great computer animation.
Got it. They're clearly not going into packaging design, because I have not talked to somebody or known anybody from the school. So it's awesome that you have that kind of background and even that sort of place to go for inspiration. You know, you also mentioned like your wife has an architecture background. Yeah. And I think it's really cool when people can connect those sorts of worlds together and create art from that. I think, you know, not to go all pastoral on you, but the very first attribute mentioned in the Bible is the creativity of God, right? I think the creativity is a divine attribute that we get to participate in when we make things out of a blank canvas, right? I just think it's awesome. So,
that's where I think the really interesting stuff comes from. And I try to, you know, be as connected with the specialty food and CPG world as much as I can. But I think it's also important to just look at super, just, I don't want to say impractical, but like different things, like go to a gallery to look for inspiration for a box or whatever, you know? And so like, my wife, actually, she also worked at the Fresh Market and she headed up the store design department. So whenever they needed remodel, she would She would redesign the flow. So she, that's another thing she brings to our company is, you know, looking at packaging from a store flow perspective. And it just, if you live in this, if you live in too small of a bubble, then stuff starts to look very stale and yes, just not inspired. And so like, yeah, there's so many other, like, that's why I love printmaking, like physical printmaking, like on a press, like with relief printing and lithograph and screen printing. So I did a minor in printmaking at Ringling because
that's cool.
I needed that fine art aspect. Like we had the commercial art illustration track that I was doing that was very practical. And, you know, they even taught us about taxes. We had a portfolio class where we spent 3 or 4 weeks just on taxes. Like we didn't look at anything else, but, you know, and so that was neat to really be prepared for that, to go an editorial illustrator, or you're going to go to work freelance for an agency. Mm-hmm. You need to have that business acumen.
Right.
And so
it wasn't a class on how to get creative with your taxes, because that's probably a bad idea.
No.
I hope the class was pay your taxes understand tax codes and finances.
There was actually, it was funny, that particular segment of the lesson, they showed, like, I can't remember who the famous illustrator was, but it was like, we all know so-and-so, you know, clicking through the different slides. And, you know, they did this beautiful cover for, you know, the Saturday Evening Post or whatever, and so on and so forth. And then they were like, and they owed the IRS, you know, $2 million in back taxes because they never paid, you know. And it was like, what? Like this?
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah. And they almost went to jail. So we're trying to make sure you guys don't do that.
That's a great point.
It was really cool. You know, we have this like worship of artists, and we're like, they can do no wrong, but no, yeah, you can do wrong. Like the IRS doesn't give two poops about what you've been published in. They want that money.
Yeah, exactly. So we've covered in the first 25 minutes a variety of topics, from circuses to tax evasion from famous artists. And we have yet to dive into a very critical question, which is you obviously do packaging design, and is it mostly primarily focused on, you know, food, beverage, kind of small, medium-sized food and beverage companies that are in e-commerce and retail, or do you expand beyond that realm in terms of the work that you're currently doing, or just, you know, you could obviously design for many different places, but do you have like a sweet spot where you're like, boy, we really nail this kind of for this company, we're really great at helping them out?
Yeah, no, you put a good definition on it. Like that's exactly what we do. You know, like we've tried to over the years carve out the niche, and really, like, that's why we don't even say we design for like CPG, because I think CPG has this whole other connotation of like Kraft, Coke, Mondelez, you know, like these bigger companies. And we really work with these smaller, that's why we say specialty food and beverage. You know, we don't have a revenue number that we work with, you know, that we define for brands, but it is exactly what you're saying. It's these sort of small to medium sized companies that have probably been out for, you know, a few years. They've had a few iterations of their packaging and their branding. We do other stuff. And they're just ready to really like either introduce themselves nationally, you know, like, you know, maybe they've just been regionally, or they've just been in farmers markets, and they're ready to really like introduce themselves to the world, and they need to rearticulate or themselves. And especially if they're looking at going on a grocery shelf, you know, like I think so many new brands in the pandemic are like, oh, I'm going to skip that, and I'm just going to go D2C. And it's like, yeah. And it's like, you don't understand. Like, I mean, it's a huge investment to get on the shelf. I get it. Like, I'm not like, I'm not saying that that's not, it's not easy, but like, that is where you get the most traction. That's where you get the most eyeballs. That's, I mean, just when you get on shelf at a major retailer or even a regional, like that really shows that you are legit, you know? And like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not even, you know, when you look at the numbers, I was shocked at how even post COVID, how the small percentage of items that are actually bought online versus brick and mortar is astonishing. I don't remember what the exact number is, but it's really, I want to say it's in the single digits or the low double digits in terms of the percentage of money that's spent versus going to a store. And, you know, I think a lot of that is you go back into a store right now and you'll find out there's people who just love to be in a store. They just love to be surprised. It's a journey. It's an adventure. And I know there's people who are like very type A who are like, nope, I have my list and I go. It's like, okay, well then that's your prerogative. But you look around and there's people just like, it's like their happy place to just be wandering and what new things are out there and what do we got? Oh, look at this. And they're picking up the label and they're stopping and they're checking stuff out. That is way more common than I think most people really realize. Cause you know, I get asked quite a bit about packaging and, you know, like what's the role and has it totally changed to go to like e-commerce and D2C? And I'm like, well, yeah, it's obviously a consideration, you know, unboxing videos are crazy right now, but shelf appeal is still a really big focus of your packaging design, because that's where you're still going to get, like you said, a lot of traction, a lot of traffic, a lot of validation, you know, to say like, we're in, you know, whatever it is, Whole Foods or Wegmans or HEB or whatever or Costco or Kroger, or whatever the retailer is, you're like, I've made it. I'm there.
Yeah.
That's a really big deal.
Yeah. And I also heard, it was funny, like someone, it was either a webinar or Clubhouse or something. They were like, if you're solely going to go D2C, you better have a D2C wizard on your staff who you're paying millions of dollars to drive that business, because that's the only way to be successful going only D2C.
Yep.
And I just laughed at that, because I just imagine this D2C wizard guy, big gray beard and, you know, all this lightning and stuff. But it's true. Like, you think that it's like this, like, you know, just this, you know, this assumption that, because just like with like social media, like, oh, social media is free. So, you know, sign up for an account, it's free. So, you know, it should be free to create content and all that other stuff. No, it's not. Social media is very expensive to do it right. And same with D2C. Like, what, you think you're going to set up an Amazon store and then suddenly you're just going to be like making millions? No, you're going to be buried in the millions of other brands that are selling the same thing as you are. And it's all about how much money you put towards it and the strategy you put towards it.
Right. So, and by the way, Amazon might have a competing product
that
they're incentivized to sell against yours.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, like I would never knock a medium, you know, to say like, hey, this is what you should or shouldn't do. I mean, there's plenty of people who are doing really well on e-commerce, on Amazon, you know, selling through Etsy and other places, there's a lot of ways, which is really cool. There's kind of been a democratization of access for products. And I think why we're seeing this renaissance of new product development and just people are making cool, awesome stuff. And, you know, you can hire an Instagram wizard and, you know, get a whole bunch of followers and sell products on Instagram. That's a possibility, instead of having to pound down the door at the buyer, at Kroger. But it's like, you know, I'm in business development and sales. If all I did was only rely on social media to try to talk to people, I'd be hosed, because you know, LinkedIn or, you know, that's what it is for me. Like, it's a great avenue, but you've got to go out and check out, you got to pick up a phone and call somebody. You got to send them an email. You got to, you know, do what, go on Clubhouse or, you know, do whatever it is that you got to do to get in front of people. So I completely agree. How many brands would you say that you're working with on average per year?
We work with about probably 20 brands a year.
And do you have repeat ones or do you?
We do.
Is it okay? So the same people keep coming back and saying, "Hey, we got a new product. We got a new thing." And then others are either, do you have people who like change their agency and come to you because they're not happy, or is it, you know, how does that work?
So I would say we have about half and half of folks that came to us to establish a relationship, and we are just their go-to person when they do line extensions or they need this or that. And then the other half is people we've set up, and we're totally fine with this. We can go either way, but we've set them up to, because they don't have the budget to continue working with us. You know, they can then go and hire somebody to just knock something out, you know? And so, when we were working at the Fresh Market, there were a few larger agencies that we worked with that it was just not a good experience. You know, you got wined and dined by the principal, and then and it was a huge price tag. And then in-house pretty much had to redo everything, you know, after when it was all said and done, because we knew what the executives wanted to see. And so it was just sort of like head scratching, like, well, we just signed a $150,000, you know, proposal. And now I'm like busting my butt for 2 weeks to get ready for this presentation, just sort of retooling what they've sent over to us. Like, this doesn't add up.
Yep.
And so when we started Buttermilk, that was one of our big things, was to be intentionally small and to just like when brands, and it's not all brands, but some brands, new ones that we talk to, they're like, your team is small, right? Are you sure you can handle this type of work? And we're always like, yes, we're sure. And if they keep pushing me, I say, well, I led a team at the Fresh Market of me and another designer, and we annually would do 500 projects. So your one project, I'm good. I can knock it out. I'm pretty sure I have the acumen to do it. But I remind them that one of the biggest, most successful, most famous design agencies, Pentagram, works in teams of like five or less. So like each partner has a team of five or less. They work with Citibank, they work with Shake Shack, they work with all these ginormous brands, global brands, with small teams. And so if they can do this like work, it's the team that makes the work, not the quantity. It's the quality, not the quantity. And so so when we talk to people like that, it's like we go ahead and like head it off the pass. We're like, hey, we're intentionally small. If you're looking for like a big agency that's gonna like come in with all the suits and every, you know, clearly I'm not gonna be wearing a suit. But if you're looking for somebody who's gonna come in with a suit, you know, and wine and dine you, like, that's not us. Get to work and we'll knock it out and we'll do a really good job. But it's just my wife and I, and then, you know, if we need a copywriter, we have a great copywriter we bring in.
Right.
We need a developer, we have a developer. But I'm doing most of that communication. I'm doing most of the design. I'm the one you're going to talk to through the whole process. And we think that's really important to have that, you know, that institutional knowledge and that, you know, just that rapport with our clients.
No, definitely. That's great. So this is kind of my final question. I don't ask it every interview now, I used to, but I think you'll have a really interesting and informed answer to it. So you are given, so there's the wizard of DTC, but now you are the wizard of packaging. So you have been crowned, I'm trying to think if there's a Harry plotting table. That didn't work, did it? Harry plotter? That would, you know, you can like plot stuff. I don't know, that's bad. Anyway, if you think up a great name for the wizard of packaging, you can let me know. I'm like literally going through
my, like, kind of Dumbledore, some kind of Dumble something.
I know. There's got to be
like a Dumble node or something. Yeah, there's something there.
There's something. You know what? It's not our best work. We'll think of something, I'm sure, and we'll have to do another piece of content, and we'll be like, we totally nailed it. It's Hermione Granger. I mean, Granger is kind of a packaging company.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, that's besides the point. You're the wizard of packaging, Andy Kurtz. And you can take your wand and you can wave it and you can fix anything you want instantly. No, there's no committees. There's no, oh, we got to get this approved by the government. You can do whatever you want. You can fix any problem in the packaging industry or a few, because there's a lot of them. What would be the one that you would be like, this is what I would really fix about, you know, either packaging in general, as a consumer of packaging or as a designer of packaging? What it is that you see, what's the thing that you would fix?
I'm gonna cheat a little bit, and I'm gonna do a selfish one and then an altruistic one. So
good.
Selfish, like never questioning budgets, like we just, or proposals, like we just, what we propose is what it is, and you don't have to negotiate. You don't have to rationale it. It is what it is.
You give them a budget and they go, thank you, we're so glad. And then where do we send our Bitcoin? That's what they say to you.
That or they say, well, we thought it was going to be like 50,000 more. Is that okay if we pay you that more of that?
That doesn't happen to you? People don't,
it's weird.
People don't ask you to spend more money. Like, wow, that was actually really low.
Yeah,
we were really, I did have that, no joke. I had that happen one time. I gave a bid, an annualized spend on labels, and they said to me, and I quote, we spent $800,000 more. I think you messed something up. And it was actually a big giant. It was crazy what we ended up uncovering at this company, but we were actually right. And they were getting a lot of money stolen from them, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
But they did tell me, like, you're way off, you're super low, and something's wrong. Okay. So I like that selfish one.
Yep. So that's my selfish one, because I feel like I spend way too much of my day, you know, sort of having to, just like explain why what we do is worth the investment. And then my sort of altruistic one, better for the world, is to create packaging that is, can not only be beautiful and be a physical thing on a shelf, but also just, when it's time, disappear. And we don't have to worry about it in landfills. We don't have to worry about it, carbon footprints or anything like that. Because that's another thing that I worry about, is that it's like, you know, what we do, you know, if we got rid of packaging altogether for climate change reasons, I would be out of a job. I'd figure out something else. Don't worry about it. It's okay. But still, like, I feel like there still needs to be packaging there. You know, like, you can't just have like pasta falling everywhere, you know, like scooping it into your hands and then running home with it. And so there still needs to be something there, but I would love for there to be something there that is just, it's there and it's time-based, and you buy it based on its beauty, and you bring it home, you use it, and then just it goes away. And
have you ever seen the movie Envy with Jack Black and Ben Stiller and Christopher Walken? It's an old comedy.
No, and I'm going to put that on my list.
Oh, it's not a really great movie, but Christopher Walken is like the perfect crazy Christopher Walken story. But anyway, Jack Black becomes super rich because he invents this product that you can spray on poop, and it just vape. It's called Vaporize. Then there's this whole question, and they're like, where'd the poo go? And it's actually a pretty funny movie, now that I'm describing it. I remember watching it, like, Christopher Walken is amazing. Yeah. Jack Black's pretty funny. The Ben Stiller character is a little weird. Yeah. It's if we have like a packerizer or something like that, you're just like, oh, I'm done with this. It's just gone. It turns into happy thoughts, and away it goes. Yeah.
Positivity on the world.
it just turns into positivity. That's all it is.
That's all.
I love it. That's one of the best answers I think I've heard.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you.
I like how you think. Well, Andy, how do people get in touch with you if they've got questions about, how rad the Ringling School is, or if they need help with their taxes? Not that you don't want to help on taxes, but in all honesty, if they're needing help with a packaging design, I'm sure that you'll take a phone call or an email, even if you can't help them out. You seem like
the kind of
person who would just say, yeah, but you want to talk to so-and-so, right? So how would people reach out
to you? So you can visit buttermilkcreative.com, and we've got our contact info there. You can look at more of our work that we've done, and send me an email, and I'm happy to reach out and chat. So
right on.
Yeah.
And do you want to give a plug to is your clubhouse thing still going with Kirk, or did that?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. We've been taking a break these past couple of weeks because summer schedules are so crazy, but actually, we'll be picking it back up. So yeah, on Tuesdays from 3 to 4 Eastern, we talk packaging design, and occasionally we have special guests, who we talk to about their packaging design. You know, most recently we had, Lisa Laird from the Laird's Applejack company. They make, I was celebrity starstruck because I just saw her thing on CBS Sunday Morning, like in November of last year. And so that was really cool. We had Sydney Chasen of Chasen Dreams Farm, who does like puffed sorghum snacks. So we try to invite some folks on, but then some weeks it's just Kirk and I just talking, and you get to sort of like eavesdrop on our sort of bizarre packaging.
You know what I just realized too, is that it was exactly a year ago that, because we released Kirk's episode on the People Packaging podcast on Juneteenth of last year. And so, you know, we're recording this on the 16th of June. So that's kind of interesting, the 1 year connection there. But anyway, yeah, it's an awesome conversation. I highly recommend that everybody jump on. If you're on Clubhouse, connect up with Andy and Kirk. I'm on there as well. We'd love to see everyone on there. So Andy, I really appreciate it. Thanks a ton for a really lively and fun conversation. I had a blast.
Thank you so much, Adam. And I'm glad it was a good conversation. And have a good one.
All right. See you.
All right.
Well, that is it for another episode of the People of Packaging podcast. Thanks for listening. It would mean so much to us if you would like and share and subscribe to this podcast. We want as many people to know about the incredible people that we have in the packaging industry, because we believe that packaging is awesome. Thanks again.